Well, let me introduce our guest tonight. I am very happy to have one of my dearest friends with us tonight. Grammy nominee, 18-time Juno winner, producer for Tragically Hip, 3 Days Grace, Metric, Billy Talent, Bare Naked Ladies, Gavin Brown. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. Obi, Axe, what's up?
Have one of my favorite people on the earth in here to interview him. Lucky guy, gratitude.
Great. I'd love to be here. Thank you. I have a very exciting thing that happened to me yesterday that I wanted to begin the program with.
Right off the bat.
I got a hole in one.
Amazing. Yeah, wow, that was way better than I thought it was going to be. Oh, man.
Was it amazing? Like, did
it
feel?
Absolutely. Like Obi said, at gratitude. It was, I hit a beautiful 8-iron with a baby draw, landed on the green, scuttled into the hole. I didn't actually see it go in. I just hit the ball. And
that feels like you never do, though. If it's a really good hole in one, yeah, then you never see it go in.
I reached down, I picked up the tee. Someone said, I think it went in.
I love it.
I think it rolled in there.
One of those old bags you golf with.
Yeah, it was amazing. Actually, yeah. He was 70. Yeah.
I've golfed with you before, so it doesn't surprise me. I've pumped your tires a little bit too much at times, but you're a pretty good golfer.
No, I'm not, but keep going.
I think so. Thanks. Compared to me, am I a bad golfer or a good golfer, medium?
You're an enthusiast.
That's not nice.
No.
Okay.
Horrible then.
You're trying to be nice, but you're really not being nice.
Well, I don't think anyone can be good at anything if they do it once every 3 years.
I'm more regular than that, but
I mean,
what it looks like.
Okay, yeah.
Wait, then would you apply that knowledge to the amount of artists that you've heard?
In what sense?
In terms of, you know, you only do one thing.
Yeah. I think anything. You gotta practice. You gotta be good.
That's true. Yeah. You should invite me out more. I feel because I'm not good, you don't invite me as much.
I'd have to talk to you.
That's not nice
that
either.
Was not nice.
We always talk. Don't act.
We do.
We talk weekly. Yeah,
yeah. So that means you don't think a savant would like exist in that industry?
Well, there's a lot of talented people out there.
Yeah.
We all know very talented people. And I think
that's true.
I think the version of this quote that I will espouse now comes from Kevin Durant. It was in Sports Illustrated. Hard work beats talent when talent stops working hard.
That's okay.
I agree.
You know, at a certain point, there's an expectation of quality of talent, you know, at any level, at any business, in any creation, business, content, music, arts, sports. You know, look at the NHL.
Yeah.
Look how good you have to be the best in your hometown, and you're not even close
on a world scale.
On a world scale.
Yeah.
So, you know, and so, but at a certain point, everyone has a talent. It's just whether you're going to work really hard at it or not.
That's true. No, and I think one of my quotes, actually, in my book over here, mm-hmm. We can focus on the page, perhaps, but it's grit, determination, and talent.
Sure.
And I think that, you know, you need the combination of the three. I think that in order to be in that upper echelon, without the hard work, obviously, your talent's wasted. But if you do have that work ethic and you're naturally gifted, then I think that's the ingredients. I think
there's another one that maybe goes on that list is opportunity.
And true.
One of the saddest things that happens is when people do have the opportunity and they're not prepared.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of my mentors would say, you know, I can't do a Scottish accent. He's an older man.
Can you try though, please?
No,
I think please
no,
try.
No. No.
All right.
It's not pretty. So he says, you know, son, you're not doing this is when I was a drummer.
Son, you're not doing.
Yeah, you're not getting the big gigs right now. But when you are, you better be ready.
You better be ready. No. I think Mr. Hope would be pissed right now.
Yeah, he would. Yeah.
I think the one thing, and you just talked about it, what's a good mentor to you? That's the question I want to ask you, because you did mention, you know, for a lot of the artists you worked with that, you know, having a mentor is so valuable.
Unbelievably.
And what's a good, and also vice versa, what's a bad mentor look like?
So I can point to a few people in my life who weren't my parents. There was a teacher in high school. There was my hockey coach, my drum teacher who changed my life. The gentleman who signed me, he was the president of EMI Publishing. And then a producer named Bob Ezrin. So a bunch of people along the way provided mentorship for me. A lot of it has to do, and so I get to do that for young people and bands and you know, creative types. What happens is, you know, some of us, we need validation for the positive things that we're doing. And that, I think, is far better than the negative stuff. The negative stuff, like, oh, you suck, you're terrible. That's just, you know, because you haven't done the work on, you know. So the mentors that I've had have always made me feel positive about what I'm doing and then highlighted some of the areas for improvement. And so I think that's a good mentor. Like everything we do, I think, I don't think the YouTube world actually can capture, you know, the you know, I know a friend of mine, Jakir, he's got this whole new, he's produced Kings of Leon and a bunch of stuff, huge stuff. And he's he's embarking on a how to make a record series. Jakir, he's going to kill me. But but you can't, like, and, you know, people go to school. People go to Metalworks or Harris Institute or Oi Art or whatever. And then they show up in the studio and realistically they have no idea because the reality of it is you have to be immersed in the environment. You have to have proper mentoring. You can't be taught how to be Director X. You can't, you know.
100%.
You know, yes, you can be taught the skills to turn the thing on and to, you know, I can open the software and I know how to do the drop-down menus and these are the possible quick keys and all that stuff. But how do you take those tools and turn it into a hit record or, you know, a blockbuster movie or, you know, an NBA championship or, you know. So for me, that's fascinating. And everybody along the way has a mentor slash coach, you know.
Yeah.
Nick Nurse did an unbelievably great job of coaching Kawhi Leonard. Does Kawhi Leonard need to know how to dribble? No, but he needs someone to tell him to help him feel confident and positive that his skill set, which is extraordinary, can be utilized. And that's, you know, so I've been lucky to be in the room with a bunch of very talented people. And there is always doubt, and doubt is
huge.
Doubt is a poison. The minute there's one little drop of it in the water, the whole, you know, what's the piss in the well? You know, like the water is destroyed. So keeping the doubt out of the room, and, you know, and not being falsely positive, is very important. So honesty. What I learned, so there's a guy named Michael McCarty who was president of EMI Publishing for 25 years in Canada. And before that, he was at a publishing company called SBK, which was associated also with Sony with ATV, which was Michael Jackson's company. The story is he was in LA working as a young publisher, and his company got bought by Michael Jackson, and everyone was fired. The trade publications, which back in the 80s, those were a thing. People wrote words onto paper. Caught him saying, some negative things about Michael Jackson. And it got to Michael Jackson, and he said, let's hire that guy. He's got balls, right? So Michael got hired by Michael Jackson, SBK, and grew into being the president of EMI Publishing, and now he runs a huge part of this thing called SOCAN, which is our performing rights organization in Canada. So the thing I learned from him was honesty. So he honestly transmitted this thing about Michael Jackson, and it was a positive effect.
Yeah.
So I used to bring in, I got signed in 2000 to him, and he was a mentor for me. And I tell him, he's a way better golfer than you, by the way.
That's not nice
and
again.
He's still terrible.
We got to go golfing after, by the way.
Yeah, we are. I'm golfing at 3 p.m. tomorrow.
I promised to take you to the iRange. I'm going to plug that for you, Kevin. But now I'm not.
Tell me about the iRange.
I'm not telling you now.
Okay, Kevin, he's not telling me. So Michael, I'd go to his office with these songs. You know, demos and song, you know, I was, you know, first off, like I said before, I didn't know there was a job as a producer until, even though I'd made records as a drummer for 10 years or more, I didn't really know that it was a viable job for me. And he basically said, you should do that. You know, even though I had produced an artist before and we'd had a number one song, I didn't really see the career path and I didn't know how to navigate the industry. And, you know, and he signed me as a songwriter and a producer, and then also provided me with a studio to practice in and guidance. He didn't tell me how to do it. He didn't say do this, this, and this. But I would bring the songs out of the lab and show them to him, and he would, well, something's going on in the bridge, or you know, and he'd play examples of other songs that maybe were reflective of what I was missing, and So at one point I came in with this track I'd been working on for days, and I was like, this is the best ever, man. And he's like,
that's really how you said it back then.
Yeah, dude.
Whoa, man. Do you have the beard too?
I think I was just,
no, he had to start it, started growing the fucking thing
at
then.
That time.
Look at it.
My mom's very bearded. So I came out of the womb. sorry, I'm spilling your coffee for you.
I think, yeah, probably just destroyed the night and the evening.
Fantastic. So Michael said something, you know, a positive analysis, not a criticism, like an analysis of the song, and, you know, something to the effect of, you know, is that it? You know, like, okay. And I was emotionally,
it didn't blow him away, and you were hurt.
And I was hurt. Yeah. And I, you know, I was like, can you just at least, and he goes, no, I'm going to tell you the truth. It doesn't help you and it doesn't help me. The minute we destroy this bond of trust, our relationship is over.
Yeah.
And so I took that into working with all of these bands. You know, I remember one night with Gord Downie, I was, you know, lucky enough to make a Tragically Hip record. And it was around the time when he was first having symptoms of having a brain cancer. And we didn't know what it was. But one night he got emotional, and I had to step into the vocal booth where he was. And, you know, he thought some people were talking shit about him in the control room, but someone like literally farted or something and everyone laughed. It wasn't, it was so harmless, but he didn't hear us cause the talk back was off. And, you know, so he's like, come on in here. So I get in there, and anyone who knew him, you know, he's a powerful person. So he starts laying into me about this thing. And I'm like, Gord, I have never lied to you in my entire life. I've known you for 20 years. You know, why would I start now? You know, Paul just farted. It's it, you know, like, you know, and you know, and so he looked at me and I could see him calculating whether or not I had ever lied to him.
Yeah.
You know, and that kind of, trust, that currency of trust that we have,
your credibility,
is the most important thing. So I learned that from Michael, where it's, you know, always be honest. I was on the phone last night. I'm lucky enough to be managed by a guy named Martin Kirzenbaum, who presently manages Sting and Shaggy and a kid named Alexander Stewart from here, who's amazing. He manages me as a producer. He manages a mixer in England. He manages a Tex-Mex rock band from San Antonio in Brooklyn. So like hipster Tex-Mex rock. Yeah. Awesome. Great band. Anyway, he also manages this guy named Dave Audet, who's the number one remixer in the history of the world. He has an insane number of number one dance remixes, like Madonna and Celine, like everybody. Crazy. So we just had a songwriting camp about a month ago. He came up, thankfully, and he did a couple days of production. He was just asking about what's happening with one of the songs. And I told him, and he goes, wow, thanks for the honesty.
I think that's a big thing, though, and across the board, even, you know, the things that, especially, you know, the generation, I would say, you know, that me, that you are mentoring and things like that, it's rough because
When's your bar mitzvah? 12 soon?
Oh, it's coming.
Are you Jewish?
Filipino Jewish? Of course. Did you know that Bathurst and Wilson, that's why we're intersected up there? We're pretty cool. Yeah.
Steve's restaurant's right there.
Yeah. Steve.
Bathurst and Wilson. Yeah.
I'm actually surprised there's not enough Filipino Jews the way that's been situated. Yes, there should be.
Yeah, no, I was just wondering.
More Filipino Jews.
So how old are you?
I'm 26, just turned 26.
Yeah, so it's great age. You're just coming into it, man. It's
yeah,
great.
And my question is,
he's a little bit younger than us.
Months.
Than me.
Months.
I'm old.
Yeah.
But it's debatable.
I have experience. Anyway.
It's hard for us.
I'm not.
Why are you playing with that?
I'm restless.
Biodegradable.
Because I can't punch you.
That's not nice, man.
Because I can't reach
across. We're on the air.
Yeah. It would sound really good.
It would. Yeah. You know,
you'd kick the shit out of me.
No, I don't think so.
Gavin would need at least 10 types of punches to make sure he likes it back, right? You know, on the angle.
I am not a violent person, for one.
I hope.
And for two?
I was thinking about number two.
So big ass though from these people is that it's hard for most of them to find mentors, because I think at the end of the day, deep down, they want that honesty. And unfortunately, you know, I'll call the shit that a lot of us are being little bitches sometimes when it comes to taking that honesty because they're scared.
Yeah. There's definitely communication's a two-way street. I have misconstrued people's communication to me at times over the years and not understood it. And usually it's because I have had my own story going on in my head, and that's gotten in the way of actually what they're saying. The thing that I try to do, the thing that I say that I do, my job is I'm a professional communicator. And that means I communicate to the people making the music, and through the music, we're communicating to the industry so that they can sell the music, and then, but ultimately, we're communicating to the audience
to buy it,
to experience it,
enjoy it,
yeah. Buy it, you know, whatever form it comes to them in at whatever moment. We better be really good at what we do to start with, that so that they feel something.
Mm.
And so, if I can't communicate to the people who are making the music with, and they can't receive that communication, and we can't have a real, true communication, then it becomes difficult. And so I'm also going to name drop again, because I've name dropped 3 or 4 times. I'm going to name drop again. I was sitting at Quincy Jones's house. Is Jones plural or Jones? Quincy Jones.
Yeah. Jones apostrophe?
Yes.
Okay,
I was very lucky to be working with a guy.
We've heard of him.
He's pretty good. So I was involved with a guy named Carvin Winans, who is a gospel royalty from Detroit, and I helped make a record with him a few years ago. Part of that was to film some content. We went to Quincy's house and hung out with him for a few hours, and it was unbelievable. What he talked about was this notion of trust and communication. He was talking about Thriller, and he said they made Off the Wall, and it's a great record and fantastic. But what really happened that really kicked it up for them was the relationship the relationship changed. Where his whole life as a producer, he was trying to get the artist to trust him. Like, you know, like, I got to put on a little show. Like, man, I got your life in my hands. I'm going to make your hit record, dude. Yeah, man. And, you know, and they're looking at me like, oh, who's this crazy
here guy? We go.
Yeah. But he said that the most powerful stuff happened when he actually trusted Michael, and that he could take the information that he'd accrued since the 40s. Like, he was in tour with Dizzy Gillespie, and he'd made big band charts. He did Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
He's the man. He did all this. So by the time Thriller comes along, he's top of his game.
He's seasoned. Yeah.
Yeah. And so if Michael Jackson, as the, like you're saying, the person receiving the mentoring, can actually get their head out of their ass and receive that information. And I use the term analysis, not criticism. You know, we're just going to analyze what's going on, and we're going to talk about it. So Quincy said, then they made Thriller, the best record in history, the biggest. Yeah. You know, so that's a great example. You know, even Michael Jackson needs mentoring in coaching. Michael Jordan had a coach. Kawhi Leonard has a coach. Guy Lafleur had a coach, the best coach in history.
It's all relative. And it's funny because when we started, so Michelle Romanow, as everybody knows, Dragon from Dragon's Den, my mentor, I love her to pieces. You know, I remember when we started Vitopia, I always wanted my head pet for doing things. And I remember she sat me down in the office one day. It was when we first started. It was in the first maybe 3 or 4 weeks. And, you know, she said, we are not going to tell you what you do good. We are going to tell you what you can do better. And after that day, I still wanted it. I still complained. It lessened, but, you know, it was, you know, I think people that are successful, you know, you have to, you know, look at things that way. You can't be told what you're doing good. You need that honesty right now, not later. You know, if you give it, like Gary Vee said, you know, if you give a fuck about somebody, you tell them now, you know, and you're honest with them.
There's a great Neil Young lyric. I believe it's from the record.
You just name dropped again. Was that name dropping?
I did work
kind
with
of
too.
Neil Young.
There we go.
So anyway,
that harvest moon.
It's from a record.
Is that Neil Young?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I did not work on this record. It was 1974. I was one. So he has a lyric that says, "Ain't nothing like a friend who can tell you you're just pissing in the wind," meaning like, You're fucking up, kid.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, do something about it.
Do something about it. Yeah.
Okay. I got another track I'd like to go down here. Two things. One is, please tell us about working with Lady Gaga. And then I want to know about the Grammys, the Grammy nomination.
Okay. So I was at, it was like 2007 or 8 or something like that. And I was working with a band that I developed called Midway State. And they were signed to...
Loved Midway State.
Yeah. Nathan has gone on to write some big hits. And Mike Wise is now doing like... he's producing Ellie Goulding and heavy, like big stuff.
My ex, one of my exes still sends me Love Me Like You Do or that song, which is, it's,
great song.
Yeah, it is not as repetitive as, great
it's
song.
Not, it's not for everybody.
Not all the time.
Yeah. So so Martin Kirzenbaum became the A&R person. And he had his own record label inside Interscope called Cherry Tree. Cherry Tree signed Feist, signed Robin, then signed Lady Gaga, went on to sign LMFAO, Far East Movement, Ellie Goulding, Disclosure, a whole bunch of hits in 10 years, like smash.
Yeah. Cha-ching.
Yeah, he did great. And so Martin had produced and written 4 of the songs on her first record. And she was just starting to break, and you know, as one does when one is smart, one takes what's in front of you. So what we did was, the discussion was to have the Midway State get on top of Lady Gaga's coattails and ride it up a little bit.
Yeah.
So we recorded a cover song of Peter Gabriel and Kate Bush called "Don't Give Up," and it was massive hit in the 80s. It's a great song. It's really vibey, very emotional. And so,
a big Gabriel fan.
Yeah. So, my job was to build the track with the band, and I, you know, so build all that stuff. And then I met with her. She played at there was a club called Circa, which was this crazy huge.
Oh, it was the 4-floor one, right? Crazy. That was crazy.
Yeah, okay. So I was involved with them in a whole other way, but I went to go see her. She played, and then we hung out for a few hours backstage, and it was amazing. So we talked about the video and. You know, the video's very iconic, the original one, and so we talked about recreating it. And so basically, she's one of the smartest people I ever met in my life, in complete control of her creative vision. You know, very smart, you know, very, very great exchange, like, you know, not you know, very strong and, you know, forceful, but also like, what do you think? And what do you know? That's a great idea. Yeah. And, you know,
she's a good two-way communicator.
Great communicator.
Yeah.
I had met her a couple of years before in New York at a bar called Arlene's Grocery, where before she was her in a tank top and another girl in a tank top who's DJing. It wasn't the Gaga we all know. Mm-hmm. It was like, you know,
not the meat suit.
No meat. No meat
or egg.
I know you're leading to that.
Yeah, no, that was in my head. You know, not the huge dancers and contraptions, and you know, it was her and a DJ, like, you know. And I went up. My manager, I had a different manager at the time, and I went up and shook her hand and said hi. You know, talked to her for a few minutes, and so when I saw her again at Circa. I went backstage. Hey, you know, I met you a few years ago at Arlene's. She's like, at Arlene's Grocery. And
it's down to earth.
Well, but and also
remembers
just that thing. Just like,
she's really smart, right?
Very smart. Yeah. You know, like, you know, maybe she was prompted. Maybe she just, you know, I don't know.
Maybe she had a thing for beards.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know anyone who does.
that's not true.
Yeah. So that, my point being, you know, she's fully engaged in her life. She's fully engaged in what she did. I didn't get to do the vocals with her because Martin did in L.A. And we co-produced the track together.
Fantastic.
Yeah, she's great. The problem is the song actually never came out. You can see the video on YouTube.
Okay.
It's awesome. We like shot the video, made the song.
Amazing.
And then... she changed her relationship with her team at Interscope and left them behind. And that included us. So that's, you know, she didn't need us anymore. You know, I don't know what, like, you know, it just didn't come out. You can find it. There's a wiki. There's a YouTube. There's a whole thing. You can get it.
I will definitely check it out. So that's kind of cool working with Gaga. And I think the other big thing that we want to know is the Grammy nomination.
So there's a band called Metric that I worked with. I did two records with them. One called Fantasies, and in between Fantasies and Synthetica, we were commissioned by the Twilight franchise to do the theme song for the second one, Eclipse.
Okay.
Wow. So
I don't know.
Yeah.
I had enough ex-girlfriends that made me go to those things.
Yeah. So the band wrote the song with Howard Shore, who's like another John Williams. Howard Shore is like, he did all the Lord of the Rings soundtrack. He's just a genius. He's also Canadian.
Huh.
And so they had worked with him, and they kept some of the themes that he had from his score. And then I produced the song called I'm Your Twilight. It's called Eclipse, I'm Yours. And the soundtrack was nominated for a Grammy.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So it's the theme song. It's like at the end. It's a neat song. It's we didn't win.
What was the feeling like, though? You know, I mean, just getting the nomination in the beginning before even you.
Like your first HJ.
I don't know what that is, Andrew. Please tell me.
We're looking at you. I don't.
You know, you get that. Okay, just answer the question, please, sir.
It's amazing. I got a hole in one yesterday, so I don't know any.
So it's like
I'm
around.
So proud of you. I'm almost as proud as you. Hold on. I'm almost as proud of you for the Grammy as I am the hole in one.
Well, I didn't win the Grammy.
I know, but just being nominated for a Grammy, cool. It's amazing. Yeah. And I think, you know.
Well, let's qualify this a little bit. The soundtrack was nominated in the song. I produced the title track. I don't feel, because of the political nature of these things, I don't feel as personally connected with it. It's a big deal. I'm not trying to diminish it, but it's not like, you know, it's amazing.
It's just incredible.
I have some context and humility about it. It's not. Yeah.
That's why I love you, man.
Why?
Because the humility, and you're a wonderful person.
Thanks.
We're so lucky to have you here today.
I'm very honored to be here.
Super lucky. I did have one thing. I kind of wanted to pick your brain.
Please
and like get in there. Yeah. So I'm name dropping now. I asked Timbaland the same question when he said the app was genius.
Yeah.
So I have an app for choreography.
Wow, I do that's dev. Cool.
Thank you. I digitized formations where they are on stage. And I send it over.
I need you.
Let's talk
about it.
Let's talk. So I asked Tim, and I'm Timbaland, and I said
to
him,
"He's a genius,
great guy." Yeah. The fact that he gave us the time and date, you know, and then to shake the hand. My question was, because I'm a big tech nerd too.
Okay,
I did computer science and film, so I like mix it together with dance. And my question to you is: so what's that biggest change, technology wise, you've seen in the industry, and how has that either done good for it? Or made it, you know, better or sorry, worse.
Yeah, interesting. So I talk about this all the time. I think about this all the time.
And I see you're a really analytical person, and I love that.
Yeah.
So I want to really get in there.
Yeah.
So
most of the history of communication is also, you know, if we're gonna go into Marshall McLuhan, it's very much
medium is the message.
Yeah. So, you know, there's so much technology involved in when records were made, and I don't need to go into why the grooves are small and the RIAA curve and all the bullshit that goes and like the different lathing and mastering, and then therefore what the recording for the frequencies that you had on records, and then the digital era, and then now the like with CDs and you know all the other formats that,
yeah,
you know, and how the recording process has changed and the bit rates and all that stuff, and now Pro Tools. So the thing that I'm finding the most interesting is the technology of the Pinterest nature of music creation.
The Pinterest nature.
The drag and drop collaging of
our producer's nodding his head over there.
So you have like splice.com.
Shout out to Section.
You know, or you
big
have
shout out to Section.
Big shout out to that guy. That guy right there.
Right there. Come over here.
Yeah.
He's no, good. Won't come in. Keep going. Yeah. Pinterest nature.
So it's a collaging nature. Yeah. You know, like, you know, we have the same 808 collection that you do.
Yes.
You know, so what's happened is
I heard the 50 Kanye West yells on like many songs before.
Yeah. So you're not necessarily creating with an emotional intention. You're using an analysis intention and a cultural relationship so when I talk to kids about songs, they're like, well, I wanted a little like this and a little like that and a little like this. Well, that doesn't mean it's anything. That just like, it's a metaphor. It's not, it's a simile. It's a collection of similes. It's a collaging. So there's nothing actually created. It's just gathering from each of the piles. I want 3/4 pile. It's a recipe, right?
Correct.
So that doesn't necessarily, none of this is good or bad. This is just an interesting
thing. That's how it
is. And so the listening public also digests music in the same way now, because people aren't actually creating music. They're collaging music.
It's like a Frankenstein of music.
That's a photocopy of a photocopy. Mm-hmm. Like Metro Boomin made a beat and then 12 million kids the next week did the exact same beat, but they changed one little hi-hat triplet. Mm-hmm. And that's not really creativity. Does that matter? No. You know, that's not, the judgment is not there. So the technology of the fact that you don't actually have to record and you have all these sample banks and you can draw in and it sounds like something right away is fascinating. And so I don't have that brain. So I'm actually producing tracks with my son right now. He's 23. He went to school for media, but he's also been making beats and play drums.
Sharp kid.
That's awesome.
Really nice guy.
Yeah.
And so we just had a song come out. I guess it dropped. The track dropped.
On
Friday. This girl named Karis, who signed to Warner. She's great. She's an actor. She's fantastic. So he co-wrote the song, and he and I co-produced the track. It's going to be great. And he co-produced the whole record with me.
Yeah.
But he does that shit that where he's like, well, no, that's the kick drum we need because of, you know, Zane and whatever. Yeah. And I'm just like,
that's where the honesty comes in.
Yeah. Well, I'm, you know, and he knows that I'm old and dumb and not tapped in, but then I can, I can play some guitar and it's now like this fascinating event where like, oh my God. And I'll tell you another story about that in a sec. But so I can be with my history and experience, I can guide the process to the end game and make a hit out of it. And he can't do that. He can make an awesome beat and I can do the music stuff and then I can talk to the vocalist and draw out the performance and then put it all together so it's a hit.
And make it sellable.
Make it into something. And that's where the technology and the name of producer, I think is a misnomer. Kids making beats are kids making beats.
Yeah.
They're not producing anything. I'm a producer. It's like, no, you're not producing results. You're making a beat.
Yeah.
And that's where it ends. And for them, and unfortunately, well, not unfortunately, that's not negatively.
Fortunately.
But yeah, there is so much more to having, you know, success. You made a beat. Well, so what? You know, I was at a lecture the other night and this awesome team, Nova Wave. Mm-hmm. These two girls with Beyonce beats and everything.
You know, I've heard of them. Yeah, yeah. I was out and I think I've seen them at the
Red. Of course you have your hip.
Yeah.
Your hip too.
I was holding it in for a while.
never mind. So
we are hip.
Yeah, there's tragically, yes.
There for you.
I don't even know what that means. They were talking about how Beyonce's actually producing it and they were just making the beats and stuff, even though they're called producers. Mm-hmm. And it's like somebody has to make it happen.
Yeah.
You know, like, and so that's kind of where my skill set lies. I've been over to Europe a few times in the last 8 months, made a great friends in Denmark. And we brought some of them back for this writing camp recently. But the second time I was in Denmark, we made this fucking song. It was hilarious. It was the fourth day. A bunch of the guys went out and got wasted the night before. And I don't drink anymore. Mm-hmm. And I came in You know, I'm bright. Hey guys, how's it going? I just went for a
They're all like, everybody fuck off.
The one guy's drooling in the corner. Yeah. Got puke on his on his jacket. Anyway, and I go, what? You guys got a drinking problem or something? And the British guy goes, well, that's a great name for a song, mate. So we made a song called Drinking Problem.
I love it.
And I played this blues guitar riff on the acoustic guitar that was sitting there, kind of Zeppelin 2, Zeppelin 1 era.
Yeah.
And then I got a drinking problem. You know, so it's this wicked cool song.
Yeah,
we made a song in 25 minutes. That night was the party where we listened to like the 40 or 50 songs that had been made in this four-day writing camp.
Yeah.
You know, Omi was there, a bunch of fucking heavy EDM cats from the Europe were there. I didn't know who they were, but they were, you know, these guys had, you know, hundreds of millions of streams. It was awesome. Anyway, that song seemed to have the greatest impact of all of the songs that were written. And the kids were like gathering around the producer guy, like, man, they literally said, what splice pack did you get those guitar samples from? And the guy pointed to me, goes, no, he played them. And they looked at me like I was a fucking alien.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, like, like, what do you mean he played that?
Because they're losing the fact that it comes from an instrument.
Yeah, originally, yeah. And there was no, and that, how did somebody create that? How was there a Genesis moment where that thing didn't exist as a choice of a pool of guitar riffs that someone actually came up with this thing? Even though in my head it's part of I've studied music since I was five, and there's like, these are riffs, how's this? You know,
I think that's what they call the magic in music, like even in computer science. I would say there's two things in the world that still have real magic, which I would say three. It's computer science and dev. I would say music to an extent, and then people that just are surgeons.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people have no clue what goes on or how to even produce this thing, because they're like, you know, the years put into a guitar versus the years on a drum pad, and I can do this. Not saying one or the other, like there's some great talent that comes out of, you know, the beats that are made on machines.
Sure.
But I think a lot of the people that do forget is when they feel it and they see it happen in front of them. That's why everybody's going to concerts now.
So there's a difference between taste and ability.
Yeah.
So taste is a huge factor at all times in culture. Like there's people with very limited skills who actually just have taste and can guide and have an impact, you know? But then there's and I know a lot of people with lots of skills who work at Starbucks, unfortunately, but
they haven't been able to put it into play.
Violin lessons since they're, you know, teething, and you know, but
it's like golfing for
him. Yeah, he's got skills. Mad.
I have raw talent.
Yes, you do. And what else do you have?
That's right. Grit, next
determination.
Page.
Yes, great. Let's talk about you for a second. Anyway, let's talk about me some more.
Okay. You and I are very similar. We're gonna go down that path shortly.
Right.
Why are we friends? Do you think?
Because we have to be.
We are forced.
Yeah, we were forced.
Forced to be friends?
Yeah.
Tell me that story.
Well, we have to help each other because we're crazy. Crazy people have to stick together.
That's true. And I have a funny story, actually, of what made me decide to do... I've wanted to do the show for 5-6 years. And I remember... Do you remember we were driving? Where were we coming back from? Golf?
Yeah, we went up to the Breyers.
Breyers Golf. Plug. Great, great outing.
Wonderful people.
Great people.
Great people.
Great weather.
Yeah.
At the Breyers.
Excellent chicken wings.
Always. I didn't have that because I'm health conscious these days. I eat healthy for you.
Are you calling me fat?
No, not at all. Just not healthy.
Do these headphones make me fat?
No.
Do I look fat? Does this SM7B make me look fat?
I don't think so. I think you're healthy. I think you could be healthier, but I think compared to...
See, honesty. Love it.
You told me under the gardener that night, you said to me, hey man, I got to tell you something. Whenever you're done there on the mobile, is that a Amber Alert? We're going to talk about that. I'm pissed off about how people don't care about the Amber Alert.
Favorite stripper name of all time.
Amber Alert?
Yeah.
Mine was Alert Amber. Anyway.
Hung low.
Well done.
That's what I got. Thank you.
So you said to me,
that's a broad term.
Right? that we can't say.
I can say the word Asian.
Yes, me too.
Accepted. It's okay.
It's okay. So
totally.
I just want to make sure we have a PG.
You're good. Go on.
You said to me, I don't want you to be offended. And I said, oh God, what? And you said, you're fucking fucked. And I said, what do you mean by that?
Yeah.
So, and then you're it made, hey, and
an idiot.
I love you, man. Honestly, cause you're a fucking idiot too. Yeah. But here's the thing about us two fucking idiots is that I think we're extremely gifted in our areas. And that made me realize
Have you found yours yet?
Yeah. You know, you're trying to be nice, but you're not really being nice anymore. So,
I tease cause I love,
I know. Yeah. Now, listen, I thought, first of all, we had Charles Manson walk in the building, but then I realized that you're not him.
That's true.
Okay, so let's...
not killed anyone yet.
Not that we know of, not yet. Yeah. I still got to make it out of here safe. Mm-hmm. So I think what that, you know, you said you can't work in the confines of the normal fucking world, and that just shows my career. Entrepreneur, yeah. I want to do my show. What did you mean by that outside of... thinking I'm stupid.
Well, no, I don't mean idiot. I don't mean idiot as a bad term.
So you didn't mean idiot as a bad term.
So one of the things is going to have my face on the bottom corner of all this in reaction. So keep going. Yeah, just enjoy my faces for now.
It's a great face.
Thank you.
You're on.
You're very handsome, by the way.
Very handsome.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm handsome.
Thank you. You too.
He's very handsome.
I'm handsome too.
He's very handsome.
You like little boys though.
No, he's not a little. He's 26.
That's there you go.
I'm a man now.
In Millhaven, he's
a pedophile. Like, really?
No, that was joking.
Okay.
I don't mean pedophile. Like, you didn't mean idiot.
No, I actually don't mean idiot.
I don't mean pedophile. See? Okay. Please
so
continue
that.
With
I
the
want
story.
The examination.
I didn't say you weren't an idiot.
I didn't.
You are an idiot.
I didn't. Say
but I didn't mean that idiot.
You're an okay.
Yes.
All right.
Great.
Continue.
Can I?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's still handsome. I don't give a shit what you say.
He is handsome.
Very handsome.
I love him. He's my co-host.
Yeah, he's great.
This is when the mentors actually give the positive.
Yeah, this is positive reinforcement. This is when we blow smoke up their
ass. I don't want him to leave.
I don't. Yeah, that's. Yeah.
It would just.
Flattery. Yeah.
Okay. So.
He's also handsome, like truly.
Thank you.
He is
so
handsome.
You're an idiot. So this
okay.
is the thing.
Continue with me being an idiot.
I don't think it's possible for you, for whatever the story, your history growing up, whatever that is, whatever the system of survival that you grew inside of your head and your heart, you require a high level of activity. You're very, very smart. You're and people who are that smart and that hyper
active,
yeah, mm-hmm.
Hyperactive
can either channel it into pursuits that are positive or negative, and I think you've done both in your life. So, but I don't think a corporate job in a cubicle has 20% of enough activity for you.
Oh, not even
you'd
close.
Fucking jump out of the
window, and yeah. I'd hit the concrete, yeah. Get up, and keep walking.
Yeah, and so you know, it just the same way that it takes a certain kind of person to get up on stage in front of 15,000 people. And that's a positive ego thing, also can be a negative thing, but you know, that's not your normal person. Like, you know, to crave that that amount of energy and excitement and coming at you and to be able to give it back and have it met equally. So you constantly need attention.
That's true.
Yeah. And
all my exes said that.
Yeah. And that's not a bad thing.
Tell them that.
So you're looking to find the world that gives you that feeling of being held and reflected. And that
hold
that,
me
and reflect me. So that's why you do very well with highly smart people and highly successful people, because they're looking for the same thing. They're looking for that same energy, that same drive, that same, you know, ability to survive in chaos, you know, and you know, that's, you know, there's a great movie called The Departed. It's one of my favorite movies. I love it. So Leonardo DiCaprio's in there with the shrink because he's...
Someone compared me to that movie before.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So anyway, he's talking about... He goes, I'm in the room... And I can't do his voice, but I'm in the room with killers, cold-blooded killers, you know, and I notice one thing. My hand doesn't shake. And so that's actually the thing I love, too. I like it when it's on. Like... When it's let's go, like let's go make a hit, like let's have the stakes as high as possible, because that's when I'm the most calm,
and that's when we're at the top of our game. I think is and that was, you know, I know in my career with the, you know, the the businesses and from the entrepreneur's side, I actually embraced being uncomfortable. I embraced almost, you know, having the business go out of business.
Yeah, chaos.
Yeah, because I couldn't function with a normal business that was doing well every single day in the corporate environment.
I remember talking to you one day, and I think you were at a restaurant, and you were going over some spreadsheets or something, and we had a conversation.
Yeah.
And you're like, I can't fucking do this.
Yeah.
And you're like, I you know, it's not that you're not a numbers guy. It's that you're like, it's not, this isn't giving me anything back.
No.
Like, that was my
interpretation. I remember that
you're
conversation.
You're like looking at this shit and it's not giving you anything back. Yes, I need to do my tasks in order to get to A to B.
Yeah.
But that wasn't enough. Someone else can do this and the business will operate better if I go figure some crazy shit out.
Yeah. I remember that conversation.
I think people just, especially at your levels, and like, I think I test myself to this too. I don't think you like, or we like easy, because easy's well done, easy and not hard and not a challenge.
I unfortunately don't know what that is. I don't know what easy is. And
I don't either.
That,
I hear you.
That, you know, that has to do with a number of circumstances in my life that were my own doing and were just historical and biographical. Easy was not part of the handshake deal I made when I landed on the earth.
Yeah.
And then I fucked myself up too. So I made it even harder. And some of it was because I was bored. Like I was really fucking bored.
Well, that leads us down a different path. I think, you know, I'll speak from the eye and you can, you know, speak on what you want. But, you know, for me, one of the hardest things, and I think that's why I embrace cleaning up my act and giving up the drinking, any recreational drugs, cigarettes, I gave it all up. And I'm over a year at this point. And that was one of the hardest things. And it's constantly hard every single day. But I deep down wanted to make that decision. But I actually embrace how difficult it is. And now I get, you know, now I put all my time and energy focused in the show and that kind of thing. So it's amazing. Well,
I think, you know, people like us need structure. You know, and that structure needs to be a fairly robust one because we're going to push against it. And we're going to, you know, question it and we're going to, you know, go really far on either side. And so that's, you know, getting all fucked up all the time, you know, is a kind of structure. You're living in chaos at all times.
It's a crutch and a structure.
Yeah, it's a structure. It's a controlled chaos that you're actually in control of.
Yeah.
It's a control mechanism. It's a safety mechanism. And then when you lose the, you know, whatever the things are that you're creating that for you, you lack that structure.
Yeah.
Which is funny thing. People are like, you know, you're high all the time or drunk all the time or whatever. Yeah. Everything's out of control. And it's like, no, everything's perfectly in control.
Yeah.
And then so not getting high or drunk all the time, whatever. Then you have to create another, you know, a set of control mechanisms and structure
to focus on. And it's funny because I found for myself, you know, I was speaking with another individual, we'll keep his name out of it, but you know him very well. And I said to him, you know, I feel weird. And this was a couple months after I'd, you know, quit everything. And he said, well, listen, man, he goes, you know, you've been used to having this bouncy ball going back and forth with, you know, while being under the influence or being hungover, you know, and so you had a floor and you had a ceiling and now you've quit it all. So now your bouncy ball is not regulated. Mm-hmm. So my bouncy ball is going all over the place. So I was panicking in the beginning and I was thinking, I'm fucking crazier now while I'm clean than when I was active. And
that's,
you know,
true.
Yeah. That it from what you remember back then or still currently.
I never knew you back then. I never knew you when you were crazy.
That's true.
Yeah. I'm
glad you didn't.
Oh, fuck.
Imagine we both knew each other when we were crazy.
I don't want to know that. No. I don't want to know myself when I was like that back then.
Yeah. I'm trying to forget still.
Yeah.
Now you're
interesting. It's interesting.
But it's amazing how, you know.
Well, part of it is that we're, you know, you numb yourself out. You know, whatever it is to not feel is whatever you do, whatever the thing is. It doesn't have to be drugs and alcohol. It could be
any
shopping, food,
any, you know, behavior.
That's an addiction.
Consuming your computer and know,
I'm
going to take a million photographs today, you know, like whatever it is to get outside yourself so that you don't have to live inside yourself. And that's, that's the hardest part is coming into yourself and making friends with yourself and beginning a relationship with somebody.
Getting to know.
Yeah, you
getting to know yourself. Yeah.
You never knew this person before, and it's yourself.
It's a big part. And, you know, honestly, Gavin, you're a big part of my life, one of my closest friends, you know, and these are conversations we have all the time. And sometimes I'm in panic mode with myself. You know, no one's done anything. No one's said anything. I think someone's thinking something from something I said before. And I call Gav and I say, man, here's what happened.
Yeah. And I'm like, nothing happened.
And then I'm like, okay, you're right.
All in your head.
And then I go for a run and then it's good.
Most times it is. Yeah. You know? It's hard to face yourself. Like,
it's all about the stories we tell ourselves.
Yeah.
The
whole thing. I'm my biggest enemy.
Yeah. But also, you know, let's go back to the mentoring. Let's go back there. So, you know, this, I was saying that the positive mentoring is the validation of the story, you know. So there's a band called Billy Talent. I worked with first two records. So Ian, the guy who the main writer, the
got some big fans here.
I'm a kid Billy from Talent. Cambridge, Ontario. Oh,
they're great. Yeah,
come on.
Yeah,
of course.
So they're amazing. So Ian came to the table with like eight different parts in a song. Usually a song has three or four parts.
Yeah,
and he didn't see the difference in the qualitative nature of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so he didn't have a context to reality. Like the reality was that wasn't very good, but these two are fucking unbelievable.
He focused on,
he couldn't see them. He couldn't, they were all his babies. They were all, you know, so what, you know, behaviorally I was doing things in my life that I thought were all the same.
Yeah.
And I realized these three activities were destroying my life. And they would seem to me to be the same as the other. Like I didn't
normal.
I didn't have a perspective on my life.
Yeah.
And so getting that perspective needs mentoring. Like, because I still don't know all the time what's the right thing to do. So I need to, I need to trust my mentors.
Sure.
And, you know, and so when I would say to Ian, you know, I think that part's great. He'd be like, really? I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. You know,
and it's not,
you know, and it, you know, and then, well, and those two parts, let's just try writing something else. Really? Yeah. You know, like this, you know, and at first it baffled me, like, how can you not see that that's really good and that's not? And then I realized that he couldn't, and that's okay. You know, cause you know, the same way, you know, in, you know, we all need help. We all need perspective. We all need to have someone help us with the perspective. And for him, the story in his head was that he made them, all these parts, and they were great parts. They're just the same.
Yeah.
You know, and so
perspective.
It's all about perspective.
Right.
And so, you know, you've got to train your mind to learn what the stories are that are the good stories.
My dad, I always called it the deprogramming of your mind. And, you know, when you hear, oh, that's hard. And he goes, no. That's a challenge. And then he goes, you like challenges.
Yeah.
And that was bred into me.
The way to look at it.
Yeah. And honestly, I was like, this is dumb, you know, but as he kept on saying and saying it kind of ingrained in the back of my head that I was like, wow, I love when something is very difficult because this is more rewarding.
Yeah. And also you start to tell yourself these things. And sometimes I feel like Tony Robbins or something.
When you look like Tony Robbins.
No,
I thought you were...
Just so your guns Robbins. Everywhere.
Yeah, and his face is so big on the billboard.
His teeth are so big. He could eat corn through a picket fence. Anyway, I love Tony. He's going to be on hopefully in a couple months.
Yeah, not anymore.
Not bye, Tony.
But, you know,
maybe Tony the Tiger now.
Sometimes working in the, you know, working with people, I have to feel like I'm Tony Robbins because, you know, the self-sabotage mechanism in humans is so ingrained.
It's unbelievable how intense it is.
It's ingrained.
That's
it's
such an innate thing, though, that you work with, which is like, it's so... you know, original to a person, which is music. And that's why
I also
probably
think
hard.
It's in everybody though. Like it's actually, I think in
I'd
everybody.
Agree with that.
Like, the conversation most people are having about themselves to themselves, if it actually was verbalized, they would get sick. Like,
I do this or what happens if I fail?
Or I'm an idiot. Yeah. I don't deserve this. I'm horrible. I'm disgusting.
Yeah.
I'm gross.
Not comfortable in their own skin.
And if they were to say that to their best friend, they would feel shameful, but they're more than happy to have this dialogue.
Say
it to themselves all day long.
Or even to a complete stranger, which is really fucked up to think about.
Well, I mean, that's what keeps shrinks in business, you know, and many of my friends use those shrinks to, you know, to get that out because they're scared to even say it aloud out in public.
Totally. You know, it's just that's, but changing that dialogue, like your father, changing just the, you know, the words, you know, seem powerless at first, but they're unbelievably powerful. If you just, you know, like I said earlier today, I said, we do not criticize, we analyze. Yeah. And therefore that takes a whole realm of possibility of shame and self-doubt out of it. If we're just looking at it, we're just looking at it. We're not pre-qualifying each of the decisions with disaster or success. It's like, this is what this is. Mm-hmm. Then we can choose to then look at what are the ramifications of the decisions. You know what I mean? There's no pre-programmed reaction. It's like, you know, and I'm putting this in a musical context.
No,
you know, like this, play this chord with this chord. Well, that sounds happy, right? You know, or that sounds like this. Mm-hmm. Is that what you want? You know, not like you're a fucking idiot to play those two chords together. You don't want it to be fucking happy, do you? You fucking idiot.
You know,
but I've seen that happen. I've seen some old school guys screaming at these artists, and it's like belittling and berating, which is also a technique to get what you want.
Oh man, you know, it's funny because we deal. So I, I'm a partner in a firm with Michelle and Michael Cronin's acquire agency, and we work with entrepreneurs every day. Some have a lot of money, some don't. We're an official premium partner at Facebook.
Lend me $20.
Will you shave half the beard? I will give you money if you do half the beard off tonight.
How much?
$20.
One middle.
Do you want
line.
Me to break into my questions?
You were gonna say $50,000 or something, right?
That was for question. Okay.
I'll donate it to charity. If you give me $50,000, I will shave my beard and give it to charity.
I want 2-year artists to sign up to acquire so that we can do Facebook marketing for you.
What does that have to do with the charity?
Well, because we would donate some of the profit to charity.
Oh, I get you.
Yeah.
Let's make a deal then.
Okay.
Let's do it.
We're going to talk about that.
I'm not shaving my beard. You're just giving me money for charity.
Fair. But then you're going to input it back into the business, and then we're going to give a portion of that to charity, and the rest will be so that the business can run, so that it can further be more charitable down the road for years to come. Sustainability. We can talk about that next time you're on.
When's that?
We're going to have to book it right now, actually.
I like Gavin's reactions.
Is that after Tony Robbins?
That's after Tony Robbins sues us. We'll be having you back in here. Now, I wanted to talk about something just really quickly, just to lighten things up a little bit. I'm beside myself with the complaints about the Amber Alert. And we were talking about this earlier, and I was talking with you about this too, Axe. You know, the Amber Alert is designed to save children's lives, period. When they're abducted, when they're missing, the Amber Alert is designed to save kids' lives.
There was one last weekend.
People are calling in to 911 complaining. You know, I can't, honestly, I want to do this plug out because it's so fucking ridiculous to me why anybody would be upset if they're woke up, to call 911, to complain online, just any of it. You got to be a fucking moron to do that. You got to be one selfish, self-centered piece of shit to not care.
Did you just call me a self-centered piece of shit? Because I did.
I think
I just
sometimes
called myself that.
I think sometimes we are. Both of us can be at times.
Sometimes?
I think a lot
get
of times
your head
we are.
Out of your ass the whole fucking day.
That's true. But let's get back to yelling at people because I don't want to yell at you right now. I want to yell at people for.
Why do you want to yell at anyone?
Because I'm upset right now.
Are you?
I am.
Sorry.
I'm.
Want to hug?
Should we hug right now?
I think both cameras will catch, so if you want, go hug.
Let's hug, man.
I love you.
Are we getting over the table? This is fun. Right. There you go. Hey, guys, welcome to the Obi and Axe Show. I'm just kidding. And that's our intro. Yeah,
so anyway, listen, if you think about complaining about the Amber Alert and you have a problem with help with someone wanting to find their kid, I want you to go missing, and I don't want the Amber Alert to go off.
That wasn't very nice.
If they were complaining about it, and they were an adult.
Okay. Here's the thing. I also think that this is kind of Black Mirror-y.
So now...
He's staring at me. He's creeped me out like those two little redheaded chicks so on the fucking Shining.
You're an idiot.
That's true. But I will say, it is pretty shitty to be complaining about the Amber Alert.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Honestly.
Just absolutely. The reason I'm looking at you is I'm waiting for there to be like anything debatable about that. Like literally.
Well, why I'm wondering why it's even, you know, why people even have made a deal of this.
I think if you look on the internet, which is often...
It's a scary place.
Yeah. You'll find people who call 911 because they don't have enough cheese on the pizza that gets delivered. Like,
yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah. Same with people going to the emergency room.
My mom's a nurse at Emerge, and she said she gets, I think...
A Filipino nurse?
Oh, my gosh. No way. Yeah. And she gets people whose arms fall asleep. And they go, yeah, my arms fell asleep.
Yeah, it's crazy. The abuse of the system.
It's crazy. But I think the problem is, I think it's the technology thing. And we're also used to really good technology. Mm-hmm. And the fact that when technology is actually working and doing its job, that's when people are getting pissed. So I don't really know what people want at this point. I'm like, do you want to feel safe and help the world? Or do you want it just to be
just crazy.
Beneficial to you?
I read it. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
That people were getting upset about, you know, trying to find a missing child who could potentially
be dead,
be murdered.
Of course.
You know, so. Yeah.
Well, I think it's horrible. I don't think you should wish upon them that they go the missing themselves.
That's where you come in. See, so that's where you help me. When I get angry and I get upset at people.
I hold you and you cry.
You hold me and I cry.
Yeah. Like, is that a hyperventilating cry?
It's weird to be held by a 6'3" man with a Manson beard, but somehow I'm comfortable.
It's fine. Yeah.
So no, you know what? I take it back that I want the people upset about the Amber Alert.
Hug people, it's weird.
Only me.
Okay. Oh, okay. Great.
Only me. Great. Other people,
it's weird.
I'm sure
you.
They don't look
it. It's not weird.
It's strange for me when you hug me.
What's happening?
So I want to ask you two quick questions before we wrap up. You ready? It's a speed round.
Yeah.
So here we go. Great.
Okay. It's a game.
Here we go.
Let's play a game.
I love games.
Ready?
Okay.
Nike or Adidas?
Nike.
Adidas.
Mac or PC?
Mac.
Tomato or tomato?
Tomato.
Jobs or Elon Musk?
Elon Musk.
Ooh, fuck yeah, I think so. Ooh. He's alive.
Interesting. I want to get back to these.
I like Jobs, actually. Let's go Jobs.
I'll go Musk.
Hmm. All right. Pac or Biggie?
Pac. He's angry like me.
I like Biggie. Biggie,
see, because he's relaxed and I'm angry.
I ask these questions to the producers and I'm like making sense. I know the personality that comes out of this. Almost done. Here we go. Pencil or pen?
Pen.
Tablet.
Ooh. These are also acceptable answers.
That he cheated.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Dogs.
Summer or winter?
Winter.
Spring and fall.
Mm-hmm. Difficult, son of a bitch.
Be contrarian.
He's wrecking your game.
Mario.
I like summer because of golf.
But I also like spring because I can wear...
I told you not to bang things.
Yeah. Mario or Sonic?
Mario.
I've never played any of those.
No, Marvel, because they were
Capcom.
Way before your time. Where were you in fucking... what is it? Atari out of the box.
Yeah, Joust. Atari. It was an amazing game. I had a VIC-20 when I was a kid.
Okay, let's continue the game.
I got two more. I'm going to skip Marvel versus Capcom. Or are we good with
that? They were throwing rocks instead of Duck Hunt.
Here's my last one. Ready?
Okay.
Paul or John?
Paul.
What?
Paul McCartney or John Lennon?
Paul McCartney.
Okay, good. We agree on those.
Great.
Yeah, now what's the reasoning for the game?
The reason I just wanted to see, you know, it's a personality test.
And what did you know now?
The Elon versus the job situation, that was nice to see. Aggressive versus a little more calm, but still geniuses on both sides. So it gets to your intellect a little there.
I also use Jobs products. I don't know what Elon's products are.
It's true.
Tesla.
It's a mystery.
And the rockets, and I'm sure.
Flamethrower.
Rocket Man.
Yeah, he's dating Grimes. So Jobs. I don't know. We'll see.
Cats or dogs, too, was a good one.
Dogs, both dogs we choose. You have a dog. You have a new puppy.
I do.
What kind of puppy?
I went on your Instagram and checked it out.
His name's Opie.
Opie.
Like Opie.
I'm Obi.
I know.
Maybe, you know what? You better behave yourself because it's going to be the OP and Obi show soon.
Can he come in when the dog whisperer comes in?
Caesar.
You getting Caesar on here?
Potentially, yeah.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah, potentially. We'll bring your dog in. Is your dog behaved?
Getting there. He's well getting trained. Yeah,
maybe we should bring Caesar
I just got
in for
this
Gavin.
Bad boy.
Oh, beauty.
Yeah, Sheba.
Beauty. Oh, beautiful. Yeah, you know, she's been in our office.
He's been in our office.
Yeah.
I'm seeing Quaker.
Quaker State. Quaker, yep. Yeah. The giant greyhound, Quaker State.
Are greyhounds excellent apartment dogs?
Amazing.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
He sleeps on a giant.
He's taller than you.
That's not nice to say.
No, it's a fact. I was an analysis, not criticism.
He's 6 feet. I'm 5'8" and a quarter on a good day.
Like, I feel the stilettos.
I'm 5'10" on hockey skates.
Stilettos?
Ladies and gentlemen, this is where we're going to end the show.
Thanks for joining us, Gavin. Gavin Brown.
Appreciate it.
Good luck.
You're awesome. Anything you want to say as last words?
Thank you very much. You're amazing.
You're amazing. Thank you.
And then there's you.
I'm amazing, too. Thanks for watching, guys.
Thank you.